watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew and my good friend Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm well. Did the intro music feel slow this morning to you?
No, are you just like hyped up on cocaine?
Must be, because I was like, why is this so slow?
No, it felt the same.
Just normal.
The audio levels are off. I can tell that my kids were playing with it. Can you turn my headphones down just a touch?
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. That's better.
Gotcha. You could see it was twisted. I'm doing well. The weekend is nice. We have a restaurant here in town called Sweetwaters, which has always been like sort of well regarded by local folks, but nothing spectacular.
No.
The place where the hotel where Sweetwaters resides caught on fire a few years back.
It was arsoned.
And sure.
Yeah.
And that actually doesn't matter to me. and there was some talk for a while, because this hotel is pretty old, that maybe it would be sold and just go away. The real estate's kind of interesting. Anyway, they did decide to rebuild and remodel. And I went to the remodeled restaurant for the first time last night and was thoroughly impressed, Andrew. I don't know if you've been to Sweetwaters post remodel, but I have been
since my wedding rehearsal.
I would say, which is well, just so you know, well before the you at home.
Well before the fire.
I would say it is up there it's a very nice restaurant now.
They're bringing a new chef, because that was, I think, the bummer. Like the restaurant venue itself had a very like riverfront kind of like 90s feel.
And so they've just updated all of that. It's more open. It's less dark. The bar is really cute. They have a fantastic menu. I was super impressed. So I had a great ribeye last night, 16-ounce ribeye. Hmm. And I had some baked Brussels sprouts, some crispy baked Brussels sprouts, which were terrific. And they were served with an aioli, a homemade aioli. Mm-hmm. Everything was fantastic. Mm, so how are you?
I'm good. We went to Scandinavian Festival last night.
Yeah, the Scandi Fest.
So the city, just the town just north of us, 64 years ago, was like, man, we got to do something to like bring people here sometimes. And they were like, let's do a Scandinavian festival. There's no reason for a Scandinavian festival.
They do have historically a big Scandinavian population.
Yes. It's a weird place to do it. And the thinking behind it was, well, nobody else has one.
Mm-hmm.
So they started this Scandinavian festival that has grown to, they closed down. I mean, they're basically their entire downtown, like all 4x4 city blocks of it.
It's small county fair size, I would say. Like tiny county fair size.
But it's all, yeah. And there's two stages. There's like two performance stages that have like constant ongoing things up there. Bunch of food trucks with great Scandinavian food. Each day is dedicated to one of the four Scandinavian countries. So I've never been. I've lived in Eugene a long time and just have never been. And yesterday, one of our older kid was with a friend, and I'm like, let's go to the Scandinavian festival. Worst case scenario is we go and just have some decent food. And I was so pleasantly surprised. It was like a little county fair. There were tons and tons of booths, tons and tons of food carts, tons and tons of food trucks, like art shows and a craft fair, and it was super fun. The weather was great. I was introduced to a new variety of hot dog called a pulsa.
Okay.
A road pulsa. And it is red sausage, basically. But it was life-changing.
Yeah.
So it is a Danish hot dog that just doesn't taste, it doesn't taste quite like a hot dog because it's not exactly an American hot dog. It's this beef and pork blend, great snap on the skin. They do like a citrusy kind of potato salad, remoulade with pickles and crispy onions on top of it. So I'm about to embark on a sausage making journey to recreate that because they were terrific. I also had
it did it for you.
Yeah, we had some potato sausage dumplings called Kropkakor.
How much did you guys spend? If my recollection is that everything is super affordable.
Yeah, everything was really affordable. So like lemonade is their moneymaker, right? Because it's summer. So you pay $5 for a lemonade. But, you know, we got these four potato dumplings stuffed with sausage for $10. And we got that hot dog and fries for $15. And there's no admission fee. It's just there and delicious. We had a variety of different pastry desserts and yeah, it was super fun.
I love that.
It was interesting. There's, you know, all these Scandinavian dance troupes. Mm. And we were watching one of them and my wife looks at me and is like, how does a person get into this? And I was like, I really don't know. And you look at the population of the majority of that dance troupe and it all kind of makes sense. And then there's like these two outlier dudes who like look like Skarsgård brothers. And I was like, what the fuck are they doing here? Like, did they travel here for this?
I think they do. I think a lot of people travel here. It's a really
But most of that dance troupe is all local. It's like a Junction City dance group.
There are Scandinavian groups around the country that come for Scandifest. And there's other Scandinavian festivals around the country in the summer.
Yeah. So it was really fun. If you have one local to you, or I'd say even within like an hour's drive. Yeah.
Or come to Eugene and we'll join you. We'll join you one of these Saturdays.
Yeah, there's two beer gardens. The problem with the beer gardens is because it's in the downtown of this little city, your drinking is restricted to the beer garden.
Yeah, so. And you're split from your if you want to go to the beer garden, if you go with kids and you want to go to the beer garden, you've got like the alcoholic dad who's in the garden and the rest of the family.
Yeah.
At the fest, which is better if you go like on a date.
Yeah, I think it would be more fun. I think Sam and the kids are going to go back today.
Just don't drink and bring a flask. Well, maybe I'll go with it. Maybe I'll go with her.
Yeah.
Take my kids.
Yeah, have fun.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's how I'm doing.
So Andrew, before we start, so we're not here to talk about Scandinavian festivals. We're not here to talk about whatever I talked about, nor are we here to talk about whiskey. But before we start, I need a minute. So I this last week or so, I had a revelation of the whiskey type, and you have got two glasses of the revelation in front of you. These glasses, I'm just going to say, I'm going to set this up and then we're going to move on quickly. We're going to come back. We're going to do an interlude at some point where we can talk about tasting notes. And then this will be my other thing. So try not to take too much of your time, guys. I know this isn't a whiskey show. We've got two very different distillates in front of us, apparently, right? One of these is amber, not quite dark.
Caramely.
But caramel color. And the other is light straw colored.
Chardonnay colored.
Sure. Yeah. Fair. And then we've got two very different smells. Mm-hmm. We've got, with the darker one coming in as dried fruits, mm-hmm. raisins, figs. Like creme brulee.
Yeah, very stone fruity.
And then the lighter coming in with pear, orchard fruit, maybe some green apple, a little bit of honey, and some like maybe a bit of a caramel drizzle on the back. Yes? Am I right or wrong?
I accept all of that.
Yes. Okay, so we're gonna move on, but just that's our setup here. Do you have and Andrew knows nothing. I know exactly. Andrew knows nothing.
Yeah, I don't know. I know what I can smell and look at.
Do you have any initial like?
I was actually surprised by how enjoyable the nose is on this light colored one.
The lighter one, yeah.
Because you still get like oaky, mm-hmm. whiskey flavor, like aromas,
mm-hmm.
with none of the appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very. You get that American sort of
mm-hmm.
oaky. Okay, so
yeah.
Any thoughts on what we're smelling here?
Not a fucking clue.
Okay. We're going to just move it straight along. We're here to talk about watches. And watches we're going to talk about. This was a good week. Andrew, you sent links before me.
Mm-hmm.
And you sent the links. And I was like, that's everything.
Almost, yeah.
And so we've got a few deep cuts this week that I think are really fun, but maybe sort of like almost frivolous. But then there were a handful of really interesting things that happened this week, and we're going to talk about almost all of them.
Yeah. Let's start with the, because this is a link that I know we both would have chosen, the Ferrer Integra.
Yeah.
This is a new release as of this week. When was the last time Ferrer dropped an entirely new line?
Well, I think Ferrer actually, maybe to defend them from just a moment, from the criticism that you're almost making, but not quite. I actually think Ferrer has done a really good job introducing new stuff to their line. And when you look at their catalog, it's like, okay, Ferrer, I see you. You know, they've got the Lander. And I think in my mind, when I think of Ferrer, I think of the Lander.
Mm-hmm.
But then I go to their website and I'm like, no, you know what? Ferrer's done a really good job. So
they keep a broad catalog, but
about once a year we see something almost brand new from Ferrer.
Maybe.
That's my thought.
I feel like they do a lot of iterative design.
They do that too.
And improvement.
They do that too.
But they keep everything in the Ferrer feel. And this is a 38.5mm, 10.3 thick, 42 lugged to lug, integrated sport watch with 100 meters of water resistance. They dropped it in four colorways. They have a salmon, a blue, a mother of pearl, and a green malachite stone.
I just want to suggest, I don't even think it was a full year ago that the Lissom dress watches dropped.
Oh, you're right.
And so, you know, we've got the Field, we've got the GMT bezel, we've got their three-hander, the Tano, the Aqua compressor. I mean,
They've got a deep stable.
The Chronosport, obviously they've got the GMT, which is, for me, like I said, what I think about. But there's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot.
Maybe that's the problem, is that when I think of Ferrer, I think of the Lander, and I don't consider the rest of their portfolio. And I think that's where I get a little bit hung up on this watch. So this has an SW 300 movement, one of the top grades. They're coming in at under 2,000 euros.
Yeah.
For any of them on a bracelet. And I'm kind of hung up on this watch. I don't know how to feel about it yet.
You're hung up in a hang up way.
Yeah, I'm in a decision making state still with this watch, because it is objectively really lovely. This flat link bracelet's fantastic. The case shape and the bevel on this bezel connection is fantastic.
Mm.
Everything is really, really good.
Yeah,
I think I may be hung up about the colors, or that it just doesn't feel super fairer to me. Because when I think of Ferrer, I think of a lot of color on the dial.
Yeah.
And I want that. I love the way Ferrer does color and works with color palettes. And we don't have this on these dials. These are single dial color, salmon, blue, mother of pearl, and green. And all the colors are really good. But I'm struggling right now.
I think I'm with you, Andrew, in being in the hang-up phase. So I'll just say, on paper,
spec'd out, this is a fantastic watch.
It's a win.
Yeah.
On paper, it's a win. And that's not a given, right?
Mm-mm.
But Ferrer has managed to check all the boxes. So let's just get that out of the way. Ferrer's checked all the boxes. It comes in at 10.6 thick, which is, or 10.3, which mm-hmm. is it? Do you know?
10.3.
10.3,
yeah.
So, which is terrific. Okay, so we just get that out of the way.
And it's going to wear super thin, because most of that thickness is under the case.
Good movement. It is an integrated steel sports watch. And then let's just talk quickly about the good. So the bracelet on this thing looks divine.
Mm-hmm.
The clasp, it's a dual-sided micro-adjusting butterfly clasp, and it looks excellent.
Yeah, it looks really good.
It looks excellent. And by that, I mean the engineering looks fantastic, and the fit and finish is great. I don't know how this thing operates in practice, but it looks excellent. And furthermore, it looks to me like it should work excellently, both in terms of the usage of the adjustment and in terms of the everyday wear, both adjusted and unadjusted, which mm-hmm. is, you know, like Formex micro adjust, like it's cool, but it's meaningless. Okay. Anyway, so where I get hung up. So one, when you look at the watch, I think there's something wrong with the shape of it. We talked a little bit earlier in this week, Andrew. I think that the bracelet tapers enough, but I think the taper is too gradual for me. I think the taper is too gradual. We've got sort of a straight taper. I would rather see a quick taper in the top three links.
I think you can't make that work.
And the reason we know you can is because there's another company that makes a very similar watch called Bell & Ross that does exactly that. Okay, so you can, and I think they should have. Okay, so moving on. The other thing, I'm with you on the dial, Andrew. The colors to me feel off. So there's the blue,
which is great,
which I like. I do not like their use of red on the blue. I think they either needed to make a blue and red dial, or they needed to be more stoic. One of the two. We have these hints of red, and for me, that's annoying. I either want you to use red or get out of there.
Mm-hmm. Or add it. They got to add it other places, like on the maybe the balance and the tip of the second hand. There's just enough to be like, oh yeah, there's a little bit of red marking on here, almost like red flecks in your 5 minute intervals.
The white dial is a win. It's like a mop or a white stone. It's fantastic. Win, win, win. I love it. It's perfect. I think. I wish they had a darker dial. Something more neutral, like a dark gray or a black. And they don't. I don't really think they have a neutral dial, which bothers me. And
I think the mother of pearl is what you have to call a neutral dial.
And we don't have like a truly sort of like ostentatious dial either. We've got this raspberry color. I don't remember what they're calling
salmon.
It. I wish we had either or perhaps both more audacity and more neutrality. I feel like they made a bunch of safe decisions that ultimately ultimately don't work for me.
But they're
safe and playful.
They're safe decisions that are inconsistent with a lot of the color decisions that they know to be safe because of their success with their color use.
If you're going to be playful, be playful. If you're going to be safe, be safe. And they didn't do either. They were playfully safe, which get that A&E shit out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like the numerals on the dial, but that's totally subjective.
I'm okay with the font.
I'm so close to loving this watch. I'm so close to loving it, Andrew. It's like sort of, what are we going to call that font? Explorer light?
Kind of explorer-esque. There's also a bit of a conflict for me with the case and the bezel. Because you have kind of hard angles that are softened and beveled on the case.
Yeah,
and then a very tonneau-y shaped
bezel. I love it. I think that's what makes this watch, and I love it.
Well, that's why I say I'm hung up, because I think I like that conflict, but there's nothing to resolve it anywhere.
The green is good. I'm not a huge fan of malachite, but the green is good. It's good.
And it's cool. I mean, using malachite stone for a dial, it is objectively cool. They did a good job color matching on the...
I think we sound negative, and I want, and I, now I'm feeling like we need to back up because I actually love this watch. I think the things we don't like, at least the things I don't like, are really subjective. And so I, it's like almost like, gosh, if I were making this watch myself, I would have done different things. I think this watch is terrific.
I don't think these are even things I don't like. I think these are just, these are the points that I'm addressing are what's hanging me up. Like, I think I like this, but I'm not.
Yeah, I like it. I'll just say, I like it, full stop. If I had designed it, I might have made these different decisions. I think this is great.
It's a good release. It's a really good release. Maybe we'll get to see one in October.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, certainly we will.
That might seal the deal. Because that, I mean, really, for...
I might buy one in October.
Farrer, for me, I've always really liked Farrer's use of color. And then seeing it in person, you just get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to see a full black murdered out PVD case.
That'd be dope.
Yeah. That's what I want to see. Same brush polish scheme, but murdered out, you know, or fuck it, ceramic, but that would be.
You could probably get somebody to Cerakote it for you.
Nah, I don't want Cerakote. Yeah, it's a dope watch. I think there's some subjective decisions that I struggle with. It sounds like I think you're in a similar place, mm-hmm. but it's terrific. Yeah. Full stop. Oh gosh, now I gotta go, Andrew.
Now you gotta go.
Okay, well, Timex released a set of quartz GMTs in their Marlin line this week, and it is on like at first blush, it's a bizarre decision. And then the more you think about it, the more it's a bizarre decision, and it's perfect. It's perfect. It totally works. So what this is three sort of vintage style GMT sport watches in the Marlin line, which Timex introduced the Marlin. They've reintroduced the Marlin, I should say. And they've steadily been gearing up the Marlin for a more sort of effective brand prominence. And here we go. So these are like bezel's edge to bezel's edge, acrylic, domed acrylic crystal, 1960s GMT Pan Am-ish watches. They've got fantastic five-link Jubilee style bracelets that are probably not fantastic
at all. Oh, they're probably trash. Yeah.
They come in at like $200.
Mm-hmm.
They're obviously a no-name, shitty quartz GMT movement, but they're gorgeous. These are absolutely gorgeous. So there's three of them. There is a black dial, gold on gold. So it's fully gold case, gold bracelet, gold markers.
And on that version, there's an AM/PM ring on your minute track with like a gold inlay from 3 to 9 on your
correctamundo.
Yeah. I like that. I might get that.
There is a sort of in-between version. It's a blue dial with a steel case, but gold PVD crown and gold hands and markers. And it's when I say blue, it's a very dark navy with like a periwinkle accent color on that minute track or that 24-hour track that Andrew was talking about. And then there's also a steel case, steel bracelet, steel crown, fully steel, and silver hand and marker version of this with the same blue. These are great.
Mm-hmm.
These are great. And it sort of seems like the watch world missed these this week. The only link I could find to send you about these, Andrew, so I read about these on It's About Time, but the only link I could find is from Two Broke Watch Snobs. Michael Pignatte wrote about these this week, but I couldn't find anybody else writing about them, which is bizarre.
Because it's a quartz GMT from Timex.
Yeah. These are terrific. These are terrific. Really cool.
$200 too.
$200, yeah.
You'll be able to find these on Amazon for $150.
Well, specs. Sorry, Andrew. I should have said. I think that these are about 40 and about 20 and about 13 thick. I'm not sure Michael says.
Let's see if Timex says.
Timex does say, and I have seen the dimensions. It's like 39 and a half by like 47 long by 13-ish thick. You know, it feels like one of those watches where specs were just kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
They're not huge, though. It's like the right size for this watch. It's 40 and 20, right?
Let's see. Spec sheet. 40 millimeter case, 13 high, 20 millimeter lug width, 50 meters water resistance.
Yeah, it's perfect, right? It's exactly right.
I mean, it's more water resistance than your Patek, so.
Yeah. This is cool.
Yeah, they're cool. And I mean, Timex is doing the thing right now. They're dropping the watches for the masses that also scratch the watch community's itch.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. They did a great job with these, man. I'm pumped about this watch. It's a cheap, like, wearing watch for someone who's not going to spend $1,000 ever in their entire life on a watch. So when we say cheap, and what I mean is affordable, but it's also really fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just hard to find these things. It's hard to find watches that are really fucking cool and also affordable. And this is one of them.
Yeah.
What's next?
Formex with a new release in colorway, at least.
No. Whole new case. It's a whole new case.
It is the 41.
Yeah.
Yes.
We don't have a... This is...
This is it.
Yeah. So before 43 and 38.
I know.
That's crazy.
I saw a 39 in the wild last night, and I commented on it. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's cool. I was like, oh.
In the wild?
Mm-hmm.
At the Scandi Fest?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah. I was like, that's a Formex Essence, huh? I was like, oh, yeah, it's pretty cool. I was like, okay. That you'd think that somebody who...
I would have put money on the fact that I was the only Formex Essence in Lane County.
No, it's the red one.
Cool.
Yeah, and it seemed like he maybe didn't know what he had. Like, he just found it on, like, was scrolling Instagram or something. Yeah. And, like, just didn't give a shit. But
it's a guy with $2,000 to spend on a watch.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was a weird interaction because he's like, oh, yeah, it's cool. And then just, like, walked past me. And I was like, you'd think that if somebody watch spots you in a crowd.
Not someone who was pumped to have, like, he didn't know enough about it to, like, engage with you.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, God, he knows what this is.
Or like, recognize that, like, oh, that guy just, like, watch spotted at a distance. This is a conversation to be had. Yeah, it was weird. And it was cool seeing Essence in the wild. Because I'd never seen another Essence in the wild. Anyhow. So I was going to slow roll the...
Okay, like, I'm sorry.
The case size release.
Everybody knows.
No, they don't. That's why they're listening to us. We're their source.
Maybe some of them.
So a 41 millimeter case.
You caught me off guard.
I think, an excellent decision, and I don't know if it's a necessary decision because the 38 is so perfectly sized, or the 39 so perfectly sized. And then if you want a bigger watch, get the big watch. Having a medium... Like a small, medium, large makes sense because there are people who both of those sizes don't work for. They want a 41. I'm totally down for it. And it is in the Space Ghost colorway, which is a super cool colorway.
Yeah, it's like a Munionalista meteorite dial.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. So this is coming in at 41 diameter, 10.6 high, grade 2 titanium inner case with an integrated suspension system. They're like floating crazy stuff. 100 meters of water resistance, SW200 movement. They're only going to make 150 of these a year, which I think is probably sufficient. Mm.
Andrew,
in this meteorite dial.
Did you know that Moon Iona Lusta is like estimated to be 4.6 billion years old, making it the oldest non-terrestrial material on Earth? Probably. I mean, maybe moon dust is older, but
maybe, I don't know.
It's nuts. It's nuts. So Moon Iona Lusta, it's 4.6 billion year old Swedish meteorite. If you don't know what it is, it's a really cool story. It's got this, I can't remember what they call that pattern, but it's add something. Anyway, it's got that really sort of defined meteorite pattern with the diamond.
Widmanstaten?
Is there an M in there?
Widmanstaten.
We'd miss that. Anyway, it's that. And that pattern is seen in a few other meteorites. It's not just Moon Iona Lusta, like Gibeon, the African meteorites. But I think that stuff has been, I think Namibia's like locked all that stuff up so you can't get it anymore. So it's really, but Moon Iona Lusta, the oldest meteorite on Earth, but it's just people find it in the fucking woods in Sweden. They're just like,
oh, there's more of that.
Yeah. Well, and I think like there's an industry, like people like, you know, hunt for it, but like literally people will just be digging in the woods and they'll find a chunk of Moon Iona Lusta, which is cool.
That is cool.
Okay. Anyway, keep going. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You did give me a little bit of side eye.
Sorry. Now I don't know where I was at.
I don't know.
Like, bottom line is we have
like 41 millimeter essence.
It's a 41 millimeter essence with super cool dial. It's an interesting dial to be their first release in the 41. I expect here in the coming weeks, we'll see another press release for, you know, 5 new colorways. And
yeah, I think they're going to just like have three sizes. Yeah. And this is a fun for the first release. I do think actually it makes sense, Andrew. I think for some people, the 39 or whatever it is. Is it 39? I have it in my head that it's like 38.
Let's look.
Anyway,
that's the 39.
39, that's what they call it. Okay. So the 30, which is that's the one I have. It is fine for me, but I think for some people bigger wristed or just people that prefer a slightly bigger watch, it's small. But the 43 is too big for a lot of people. Like it's a big watch. Mm-hmm. The 43 millimeter essence is a fucking big watch.
Because the essence is a bit of a chunk.
Yes. Yeah. It's not chunky. It's not thick, but it's just
It's got some wrist presence.
That's right.
Some BWE.
And that's right. And the 43 is just a big watch, no doubt about it. It wears like a big old fucking citizen or something. So
wearing a big old fucking citizen.
You are right. That's what made me think it. I think it's a great addition.
And we see the small, medium, large convention kind of across the industry right now. I like seeing that. You know, 5 years ago we were bitching that like, I want to like this watch, but it's 44 millimeters.
Yeah.
Or it's 42 millimeters. Like, give me a fucking 36. Give me
and that's 39. Why we started the show, right?
Yeah. And now we have a small, medium, large in most, not most.
Many.
Many.
Yeah.
Tending towards most. Kind of flagship brands, like flagship models within brands.
So a deep cut watch, and we're going to talk about two Seiko collaborations this week.
Whatever it is.
But we are. The first one I'm going to talk about is not the one you're expecting, probably. This is a deep cut watch, and it kind of floated under the radar this week. And there's a couple reasons for that. So So what this is a new Mecha Quartz chronograph from Seiko. And I can't promise that this case hasn't been used somewhere else, but I don't remember seeing it. But what it is a, it's a manga crossover. And it's, this is a deep cut manga. And it's the manga that made drift racing in the United States a thing, and which made the Toyota AE86 a cult classic. So the AE86, if you don't know what it is, this is really 80s, really sort of like in like race car terms, this benign looking car. However, if you don't know, in Japan, the AE86 is a cult, is an absolute cult classic. You can't find them. It's like one of the hardest cars to find in anything like original condition. They've all been just like fucking hotboxed to shit. Anyway, Initial D came out in the 80s, and the protagonist of Initial D drove an AE86. Specifically, he raced it, and when he raced it, he would do what we now call drifting, which was to say, get it sideways. And this manga was incredibly popular, and it started in many ways the drift racing scene. This was the influence for this. So this watch celebrates Initial D and its protagonist, Takumi Fujiwara, and the AE86 car. The dial is in the colorway of Fujiwara's car, which is to say white on top, two-tone white on top, black on bottom, with like obviously car dial details, and then
instrument cluster it's a tri-compax,
yes,
chronograph, but it looks like an instrument cluster.
On the 24-hour sub dial, you get it's styled like a tachometer, and you get a headlight brights symbol. This watch is fucking awesome. It's awesome.
Is this JDM?
I think it's JDM. There's 1995 of these, which is the 1,995 of these, which is obviously the year Initial D came out. There's some Japanese text on the dial, prominent Japanese text, and that's Takumi Fujiwara's shop where he did all the work on his AE86. I've seen a lot of this type of thing, and I can't remember ever seeing anything that I thought was so perfect.
They hit on all of the high points. The reason this collaboration is good is because they kept everything, if you know, you know.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. And nothing's in your face. Mm-hmm. Like, everything is really subtle. It's really, this watch is so cool. So it's not going to be released until January. So there's some time. You can't get them right now. And we think it's going to come in at like $650. It is a 8T63 chronograph, which I think is the Seiko only version of the VK63 movement. This thing is cool. So there will be a link in the show notes. It's a Gear Patrol link because I, again, couldn't find any like real watch links. Maybe they exist. I didn't look that hard. Golly. Come on.
Mirror image markers.
Yeah.
Like, just, yeah.
I'm going to like, nailed it. I'm going to try to find this because I think this watch is... This watch is really, really cool.
Like a 40 millimeter, 100 meters of water resistance quartz. This is a grab-and-go quartz chronograph that is 100. Fun. It looks good. And it's fun without being audacious.
That's right. And there's nothing here to like make this watch feel silly or contrived. There is a D on the running seconds, which is the D from the logo of the Mango, the Initial D. It's that D. And that is but that's the only thing here that is like an obvious, like to the uninitiated, they're going to be like, well, what does that D mean?
These notes.
Otherwise, it's just perfect. It's just perfect. I'm struggling to like find something I don't love about this watch.
Besides that, it's going to be a big pain in the ass to find.
The bracelet's going to suck, and it's like kind of a whatever movement. Obviously, VK63s are great, but pry fit and finish is going to be schmedium, whatever.
Just good enough.
Everything about it, the idea of it, I love. Anyway, moving on. What are you ready to do an interlude here, Andrew?
I've only tasted one.
Okay. Okay, so we're not ready. Taste the other. Okay. We'll come back to it. Pick a watch.
Seiko 5 Sports with a Pepsi, like a true Pepsi collaboration.
Yeah, we should have just, I don't know why I said pick a watch. This is the next one.
And these are fun. So there is the original Pepsi and a Pepsi Zero Sugar varieties. The SRPL 99, a 38 millimeter dive watch with the original Pepsi white can, and the SSK 047, a 42.5 GMT with a PVD to match your black Pepsi sugar can. They're doing 7,000 of these. These are fun, right? Everyone knows what a Pepsi dial is, and Seiko was like, we'll do one.
Yeah,
we'll do like actual Pepsi. This really classic red and blue that you know exactly what I'm talking about. Now there's, from Seiko, an official Pepsi collaboration. I think they chose perfectly adequate watches to be these, to bear this burden of being the collaborative watches. The packaging is really cool on these. They come in a screw top can. Like mm-hmm. It looks like a soda can
yeah.
That screws down, and it's fun. They're making 7,000 each of these. They're going to be, under $600.
Yeah, you know,
it's fine. It's a cool collaboration that has to be mentioned.
These feel to me like a Pepsi points thing that should have existed.
Like Pepsi, Where's My Jet?
In the 90s. Yeah, Where's My mm-hmm. Harrier? Yeah, that's right. The strap, I want to get one of these just for the strap, just for the rubber strap with the, like
the Pepsi.
Yeah.
Embossing.
Yeah. It's got an embossed or a raised mm-hmm. Pepsi logo on the strap that runs full length, like a Breitling.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get one of these just for that. And then like cool. Sell the watch head.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. That's cool. I don't know. This is, ultimately it's a silly release. I'm not getting one of these, but it's really cool. And I heard a joke. Someone said, well, now will we refer to the Rolex GMT blue and red as the Pan Am, which is really a more appropriate reference. And the answer is probably no, we'll still call that a Pepsi, but
I like the Pan Am reference better too.
Clearly Seiko is taking the piss with this a little bit, and I think that's great.
Yeah. I mean, they just licensed it.
Now. Yeah, they were like, fuck it. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
We're going to do it. I don't get the sense that this is like a future like IP squeeze, which would be shitty, but I think that they're just taking the piss and having some fun.
That might be cool though. That'd be a baller move.
To do an IP squeeze.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Like, I mean, yeah. I don't, I wouldn't call it baller.
No, would that be like the NATO guy?
Yeah, that we, International Watchman.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
No, respect, man. That's a strong move. That's like seeing political candidates and then buying the rights to their name.com.
I don't do this very often, Andrew, but I want to talk about a watch I kind of hate.
Oh, do it.
And I don't hate the watch. I don't hate the watch, but I hate what the watch release means for the brand.
You hate that you love it?
No, I don't love it. In fact, I don't even like it. So last year, Omega released a turquoise dial Aquaterra, and it's not bad. It's good. It's an Aquaterra, and it's got an ombre turquoise dial.
It's meh.
And it's okay. I like it. This year, in a full-on news cycle release, mm-hmm. Omega has released a Citizen Watch. What they've done is they've taken that turquoise dial and they've put it in an Aquaterra case, just like it was before, and they've made the bezel black ceramic, and then they've added a heavily textured black rubber strap with non-functional turquoise stitching on it. And then they've put a coaxial movement on it, so it is 17.2 millimeters thick. And then they've released it and done a press junket to create an entire news cycle's worth of coverage. And then people have said, oh my God, it's so beautiful. The fuck it is. Get the fuck out of here. This is a shit release from Omega. And it, I won't say it pisses me off, but it's just.
You seem to be really enthused by it.
It's so, is this Omega now? Oh, did I mention it's $7,000 fucking dollars?
It's also not 17 millimeters thick.
17.2
No, it's 13,
is what I said.
It's 13.2 or 12.3. So those of you at home,
fucking calm down a little bit. This watch.
This is Omega. This is Omega and has been Omega for a long time. Iterative color releases, right? It's not laziness. It's just trying to capture the people that they haven't already. And we see this all the time when, you know, Tudor broke the internet with blue.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just okay, right? We see this from these luxury brands that, you know, their new releases for the year are last year's releases. Again, adding the black ceramic is kind of new for Omega. Typically, they just like make it gold.
Yeah.
Or what's their proprietary gold?
Omega's got both the Moonshine and the Sedna, So Sedna's their rose gold and Moonshine is their yellow gold.
They make it gold mm-hmm. and then they move on with their lives. You know,
they did with the Speedmaster this week. They released or the Seamaster. They released Sedna and Moonshine Gold Seamasters this week as well. That we're not going to talk about.
No, that's what they do. It's cost effective. It's what they do now. They just release new colors.
Well, you know, we know that that Swatch Group sales are down, specifically Omega sales are down. Mm-hmm. And so, I do think we probably are seeing a company scramble a little bit here. They release. Because
they need to keep hype. They need to keep momentum. They need to stay in the conversation and stay front of mind.
They released the new Orange 300M. And I felt the same. And I said similar things. I was less enthusiastic. And perhaps.
But it's not even orange.
Perhaps this release is getting some of the feelings that are properly allocated to the Orange 300M. Yeah. But yeah, right? Like, what the fuck is this? What the fuck are you doing, Omega?
Yeah.
Is $7,000 bucks for this shitter? It's a Citizen. It looks like a fucking Citizen watch.
Every Aquaterra costs as much.
What the fuck is going on?
This is what we get. This is Omega.
I don't actually care all that much. I'm excited. I'm vocalizing my excitement for the purpose of the podcast that we make because we got to have some personality. And that's how I feel about this. I don't really care. It's not.
No, he's going to lose sleep over this.
But Jesus Christ, this thing is irritating. You know, and I say that in the wake of me, Andrew, absolutely falling in love with a 25-year-old 300M Seamaster that doesn't work right. I have fallen head over heels.
What's wrong with it?
It runs super slow. I lose like 4 minutes a day. I think I could bump the timing, but it needs a service, so I'm going to send it in. So yeah. I don't want to bump the timing. I'll just get it serviced. But I mean, I lose at like 1 o'clock. I need to mentally bump my time. But I can't get it off my wrist. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I've got some links for my bond bracelet incoming, so it's going to make a move to that here in the next week.
And it's in really good shape too.
In the context of me having a Speedmaster that is my number one, and a Seamaster that is like quickly sliding into number two spot with no reservations. I'm maybe an Omega guy, which is why this release like really pisses me off.
Well, I think that's the neckbeard in you coming out, right? Omega doesn't exist for us.
Yeah, maybe.
They Omega does some things that we really like, but they don't exist for us. They don't exist for the enthusiast community. They don't exist for...
Not today, they don't.
For people who give a shit about watches. They exist to make money.
Yeah, maybe. Which is a bummer, right? I don't think we see that with other brands, though. You know, I don't think we see that with Tag IWC Hoyer,
we see it with Tag Heuer.
Thousand. Tag Heuer has spent the last 2 years making enthusiast watches
and watches that apply to the masses. Every single skeleton Monaco that exists.
You know, we see it a little bit with Rolex and Tudor, but Rolex and Tudor haven't drifted anywhere near as far as, in my mind, Omega. I mean, Omega's just gotten thicker and weirder, and they've fallen in love with coaxial, which is really cool tech. But because they've done that, now everything's thick, everything's weird, and it's like, where are you going with this, Omega?
They're trying to close the gap.
Baby, come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, are you ready?
And we certainly don't see it without IWC.
Are you ready for an interlude?
I am ready for an interlude. So, first off, this blonde, I can't untaste wine. The fresh oakiness and like apple and bright
orchard citrusy wine, right?
Yeah.
Like some sort of Chardonnay orchard forward Chardonnay.
And then you get the back end of like, oh, that's whiskey.
Oak.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is fascinating. Like I can't break out of that.
Where are you at in proof?
Oh. So my guess is like just about 100.
Okay. Okay. What about the other one?
The other one.
So this is the darker of the two, more of like a copper color.
Mm-hmm.
Not orchard wine.
No, not orchard wine. Kind of like hot rye feeling, thick, spicy, thick.
Velvet.
Yep.
What about proof?
I'd say like 110. My guess is that they're actually probably inverted. This is actually a
they're lower, both 120.
120, huh?
Do you know what kind of booze we're drinking yet?
I don't.
Okay. Any guesses? Well, you have to make a guess or I'm going to shoot you in the head.
Okay. Well, today's the day I die. I have no idea. Neither of these taste familiar to me.
Well, you just make a guess. What do you think? Type of booze. One guess. First guess.
Type of booze?
Yeah. What type of booze are we drinking?
Well, we're drinking whiskey.
Okay. One more level.
I think this is rye.
So that he's holding the copper one?
Are these Japanese?
They're not, which is where I thought your head was going to go. Yeah, they're not.
Okay.
But that is where, I think that's where my head would go to.
With this light color, that was my thinking was that they were Japanese.
That's where my head would have gone to. But they're not.
They're not.
Okay. So we'll move on. So that's our interlude.
Okay.
We're going to come back to this in other things. So we're done for now. We're going to drink these. We're going to keep drinking. We're talking about scotch. I'm sorry. I got to tell you. We're running out of time. Let's talk about more watches. Whiskey. Sorry, I said scotch.
some Breitling Endurance Pros for the Ironman World Championships. I'm kind of really into these. I find myself liking more and more Breitlings.
Yeah, which give us a full introduction on this watch because I'm not familiar with it.
The Endurance Pro is a big bitch. It's a 44 millimeter, 12.5 thick, flat sapphire, 100 meters of water resistance, kind of anadigi, or not anadigi, chronograph. Right.
And full analog chronograph.
Yeah. Full analog chronograph. The, this weird logo at the 6 o'clock gives like an Anadigi feel. And I always want Breitling to be Anadigi. I don't know why.
This watch should be an Anadigi. You can't read an analog watch when you're running. I've tried it.
You can't read it. You also can't read your chronograph functions in any of your, events like running, cycling, or swimming. They have two new colorways to support the 2025 edition of the Ironman Championship. First being a blue, second being a green. The gray. What is happening here? The gray case in titanium. What is it? And a. Your turquoise is...
It's the booze. The booze is
altering your brain. It's slowing me down, man.
I mean, seriously.
Bottom line is... I think these are fun. I'm becoming a Breitling guy. Which means I'm going to have to start to get into international arms dealing or something.
I'm not becoming a Breitling guy, but I like these. These are fun. I do wish they were... You know what I wish about Breitling? I wish that Breitling were 30% less expensive.
Yeah.
If Breitling were 30% less expensive, I think I would be FB number one BFF fanboy Everett Meadows Breitling guy. I would start an Instagram Breitling guy.
I think there's probably already a Breitling guy.
I'd be Breitling guy too.
I absolutely would be too because these are... $4,100 for the titanium, $3,500 for the bright light. Kind of across the board, Breitling is just a little bit north of where I would want to pay, but these are fun.
Thermo compensated super quartz. Yeah. Let's do 2,500 Breitling. Yeah. And also, can you give me an analog or a digital function? Because it's really hard to read an analog chronograph when you're, or even just a three-hander. I've tried.
Yeah, functionally, it's difficult.
Riding a bike is fine. Running, it's really hard to read an analog display.
Mm-hmm.
It's just super hard. I had a Nike watch that was an analog display for a long time, and it was just tough. I still have it at the house. It's really cool. I need to get a battery in it, but in terms of like my ability to read it, it was just a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that from you. I got to show you that watch. It's from way before watches. It's from like 2007-08 timeframe. It's cool. I got to show it to you. But just hard to read analog when you're running. Like if you're, unless you've got like a super smooth cadence, and some people do, but for me, I'm just like clunking too much to like, I'm like, you need to have that digital.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least with my eyes.
But a fun, Ironman release.
Okay.
Also nice to see an Ironman, not Timex.
Do we have, how are we doing? Oh, okay. So there's, okay. I'm going to leave that one for you. I'm going to take this one. Notice?
Yeah.
I actually don't know, Andrew, if we've talked about either of these watches, if we talked about either of these watches when they were released. And if we didn't, shame on us. And I'm feeling a little grumpy with us if we didn't. But if we did, I'm glad we did. So the Contrail GMT and the Duality too. So
I know we've talked about both of these.
Notice is, if you've been listening to us for a long time, you'll know Notice is like our OG BFF brand. And that's true in so many respects. They were one of the first brands to come on the show. They were one of the first brands to reach out to us and be like, we really like your show. And in fact, the things you're saying are like affecting the way we want to think about watches, which was cool, which was really cool.
And they were a really innovative brand in this. There was a pretty significant change in small brand watchmaking, and Notice was on like the bleeding edge of that.
The bleeding edge of it. That's right. Yes. Right. That's it. They were the brand that when we were getting into watches, when Andrew and I collectively were getting into watches, Notice was like shoving the threshold over to make room for this enthusiast space. And then over the years, Wes and Colin have become dear friends. And so when we talk about Notice, you need to know all of that.
And there were a lot of people. We don't want to take any credit away from the people who paved the way for Wes and Colin.
Sure.
But they took the baton and they kept moving it forward.
For us, for me, I will just say they embody the movement of watches that I most closely identify with.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about Notice, you just need to know that we're not unbiased. I'm not unbiased.
We're also not getting paid by them.
That's true.
To be clear.
That's true. In fact, anyway. So the Contrail GMT and the Duality 2 are, I would say, Notice's two best releases right now. They've got a legitimate GMT in a fantastic case with one of the coolest sets of specs at under $1,000. I mean, it's just, sorry, you guys, this is one of the coolest watches that you can buy under $1,000. And then the Duality, weird watch. There is nothing else exactly like this. And it's awesome.
Yeah.
If you identify with this watch, if you resonate with this watch, it's awesome. The fit and finish on the Duality, I think, is better than anything else that Notice does, perhaps with the exception of the Raven collaborations. The Duality is it, you guys. So they've released new colorways in both of these, and we're just shitting on Omega.
This is more than a colorway release.
So... The Contrail GMT in green, what are they calling this? Is it Evergreen? I can't remember.
Yeah, the Evergreen.
Everglade. Everglade. Yeah, sorry. And then
I wish there was just two alligator eyes somewhere on the dial. Just
that would be funny.
Yeah.
And then the Duality 2 in Drift Blue. Both of these are gorgeous and beautiful and amazing watches.
And the thing about Notice is that these are unlike the previous Contrail or previous Duality 2, in that they have been improved and upgraded probably a dozen times since the last time they brought something to market in either of these lines. They do such iterative improvement.
Yeah, no.
If you buy a watch and then you buy the same watch in the same colorway a year later, you're going to find a dozen tweaks that are all improvements.
For the Duality, you've got a dual crown diver that they've made almost 2 millimeters thinner, from 1310 to 1115. It's nuts. Wild. It's nuts. Like, Notice is making really good watches, affordable watches, right? Let's be clear. These are both 850 bucks.
20 to 16 taper on their flat link bracelets.
Yes.
Just a perfect taper.
And for $1,500 to $2,000, you can beat both of these watches. But you have to spend,
$700 more.
That's right, $700 to $1,000 more to beat these. That's it. If you want to spend double your $850 budget, you can beat these watches. But if not, get these ones. these things are terrific. And the new colors, I'm a sucker for a good blue. This is a good blue. The Contrail GMT, this green.
Yeah.
The only reason I don't like this is because it's Ducks colors. And I love Ducks things, but I stray away from watches and Ducks colors because I think people are going to think I got them because of the Ducks, and I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fantastic green. If you do want to get a Ducks colored watch, or perhaps a Packers colored watch, if you're a Packers fan, go Pack. This thing's right there.
Yeah.
Or maybe if you're a fan of the Oakland A's, nay the Sacramento A's, nay the Las Vegas.
Yeah, they're moving to Vegas, aren't they?
That's the TBD. TBD. If you're a fan of one of those teams, yeah, I think this is a cool watch. And I just think it's cool. It's great.
Where are we at?
Last watch is where we're at, Andrew. No.
We should talk about the Unimatic.
Yeah.
So Unimatic has improved on their Pro Diver line and released a 600 meter diver. And we've talked about Unimatic a lot this year. They're just banging things out. We've talked about Unimatic so much that I went back and looked through our notes and I was like, we have to have talked about this. Couldn't find it. So this is the Modelo Uno, reference number. So there's a PD3B, which is a black dial in 300 meters, the PD3OR, orange dial in 300 meters, or the U1ST PD6B in titanium. Unimatic may be the only brand that reference numbers make sense.
Sure. I hate them, but they make sense. Check I agree it out. With you. No, I go ahead.
The Unimatic 1S T Pro Diver B. It's the titanium, black. The U1S titanium PDs, the Pro Diver 600, and black dial. It makes sense.
It does. And you're right. You're right.
I hate them, but they're better than Seiko. They're better than Citizen or fucking Bulova. God.
Like, I can figure out what you're talking about, Unimatic.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I don't need to, like, have some sort of insider knowledge about factories and...
Yeah. Like, oh, that's the watch. Compressed into a reference number.
Okay, I'm with you.
Well
I'm
done. Salita SW200 movement in the 600-meter dive watch. An NH35 in the threes. Not chronometers, which makes sense. 750 for the steel.
No, it doesn't. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes,
I'm just interlude. Go ahead. Carry on.
Okay, so 750 for the 300-meter divers, 1,500 for the titanium. And they're good. They're the U1s. One in titanium with 600 meters of water resistance. I know you can make this a chronometer, but you're going to drive the price up. These are already $1,000, you know, neighborhood watches.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know that buying Unimatic watches... I don't know that a chronometer grade is going to capture people who wouldn't otherwise be buying Unimatic.
I have like three discrete thoughts.
Okay.
So I'm going to
spider web and spider in the corner of my window.
I'm going to take them on one at a time.
Okay.
The first is Unimatic to me feels like a brand that should be more expensive than it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you are someone who is looking for something that feels more expensive in your budget, which is at or around $500 to $1,000, Unimatic is a brand that you should be looking at. Mm-hmm. Because for me, Unimatic is like... aesthetically pushing design language outside of their actual price range.
Yes, they absolutely are. But they're still generally within that mil watch, mil spec'd.
Sure.
Kind of like down market from Zinn.
Yes.
Who's doing a similar thing, but clearly up market.
Yeah. No, that's right, Andrew. That's right. Unimatic looks more expensive. And in fact, it happens to me often. We'll be reading about a Unimatic watch and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. Unimatic is like a deliberately affordable brand. Mm-hmm. Like if you told me that these were $2,300 watches with high-end Swiss movements, Le Jupere movements, I would be like, yeah, that makes sense.
You don't bat an eye. Yeah.
That makes sense. But they're not. These are sub-1,000. Well, two of these are sub-$1,000 watches. Okay. So that's my first discreet thought. My second discreet thought, and this is a weird one, so forgive me. When we... So Foster, we've got a line. So you're going to have to forgive me. I'm going to talk about the brain of Everett a little bit here. So Foster has a couple of distinct lines in 2035. So the one of those lines is the 11 Atmos line. And the 11
Atmos... 2035?
Yes.
We're 10 years down the line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So the 11 Atmos line includes a Skin Diver, which is sort of our... sort of flagship affordable watch. It includes a field watch, which is less popular, but if you know, you know. It probably also includes some like novelties, maybe a GMT and some other fun watches. Okay. Each of these and probably like a
1,000 meter dive watch with a moon phase.
No, but probably
because I like that.
Like a sports watch. Okay. And the idea is 11 is enough.
Okay.
We've always talked about that on this show, right? Mm-hmm. That's the objective watch review, objective watch scale, okay? So this is enough for you guys. But there's also another line, and this was probably the second line we were going to get to, and maybe, well, who knows, which is the Pro Diver line. And when I talk to people about that line, they would say, you can't call it the Pro Diver because that's like an Invicta. You don't want to have a Pro Diver. I think Pro Diver is a word. It's a phrase. And we all know what it means. And I love that Unimatic uses that. Mm-hmm. Not just because I would also use that, but because I think it makes sense. Pro Diver, we all know what that means. Unimatic is like, we have our frivolous divers, which are silly and awesome. But this is our more serious Pro Diver. It's mm-hmm. it's just our dive watch, but we're making this for a serious diver.
It's just better.
Not better. It's just a more serious watch. It's got a countdown timer on the bezel, or excuse me, it's got a dive bezel. It's black. Like, this is not frivolous. It's a real diving watch. And if that's what you're interested, get this one. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's my second thought. Third discreet thought is they moved from the 200-1. To the NH35, and they lowered the price by a lot, but they also increased the thickness by a lot, mm-hmm. and I'm not here for it. This watch used to be an 11 and change watch, and now it's a 13 millimeter watch. It's cheaper, granted. They took the price from the original, I think was like $1,495, to now it's, Andrew,
it is 750.
Okay.
No, hang on.
Fine.
Yeah, 750 pounds for a steel.
But this is the replacement for the original Unimatic Pro Diver, which was thin.
Better, yeah.
And you know, and you know what exists between an SW200-1 and an NH35?
A lot.
A Miyota 9000.
Yeah.
And you know what a Miyota 9000 is? Fucking thin. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they've done here. Why would they do this? They've ruined an awesome watch, I think.
I don't know.
Why not use the Miyota here? I don't get it.
I think the Miyota is the better choice, but I'm also not.
It's $850 with the Miyota movement, right? Yeah. Or $900 with the Miyota. If they want to get the price down, and that's what they want.
For a 41.5 millimeter dive watch designed this way, I'm not offended by 13.2.
Me either, except Andrew, that before it was fucking awesome, and now it's pedestrian.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
The titanium's 12.3.
I'm never buying this watch. At 11 and change, I'm probably going to... If this is under 1,000 and 11 and change, which they could have done with a 9OS 5?
Yeah, they could have.
Or a 9015? Sign me the fuck up, dude. Mm-hmm. So the titanium still has the Sellita 200-1, which is a problematic movement. But obviously... But
the Sellita 200 everyone's
Yes. That's right. It's what's in the Formex. It's what's in everything. That's fine. But it's also a $1,600 titanium watch.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. I like it. I wish that watch had the 9,000 in it. Frankly.
Over the Sellita, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think for me, you've got the NH35 for a $400, $500 watch. For an $800 watch, you've got a Miyota 9000. And for a $1,500 watch or a $2,000 watch, Le Jour Perret. And for me, that's it. Mm. And I think Le Jour Perrets are still pretty expensive, so maybe that's unrealistic. Yeah, but
I think to get an...
That's what I want. I want to get rid of ETA 2892 and Sellita 2. Just let's stop. Let's just pretend they don't exist because we don't need them. We got Seiko. We got Miyota. We got Le Jour Perret. Let's pretend those other movements don't exist.
I think
because they just suck.
Well, no,
they're expensive.
They're expensive,
and they kind of suck. They have problems.
They do in a way that Miyota and Seiko do not.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. Three discrete thoughts. Sorry to take over your watch. I wanted to talk about it. Andrew, other things, what do you got?
Okay, I have another thing. So I was scrolling the tiles the other day looking for something to watch and came across a new TV show. And the trailer looked really good. This is a franchise that I absolutely adore. What has happened? So it's a franchise that began in the 70s and 80s and then took a little bit of a hiatus, had a couple little reboots, and in the last 10 years has been treated with such regard. Alien Earth is a new FX show that has two episodes out right now. I burned through them. The last 10 years, Alien has been treated almost like, I mean, with regard, like with reverence in the way of new movies that stay within the canon. You know, you have that period in the 90s and 2000s where you've got Alien versus Predator and like some kind of oddities that, you know, they were fun, but they weren't really Alien. Alien Earth was absolutely fantastic. They keep you in the universe of Alien and keep Alien fully involved, but they're telling this other story within the Alien universe that was just fantastic. They're like somehow making the original Alien trilogy stand up better. They're like Ramjack. They're showing up and they're lifting up the foundation of these original canon films. And it's just fantastic. So what I did is I burned up those two episodes and I was like, well, I'm in an Alien mood. So I started watching chronologically Alien. And I got through, that was the name of the first one, Prometheus.
Okay. Prometheus is great.
Which I hadn't watched in a long time. And then I got into Covenant and Romulus. And I was like, oh my gosh. How do you make prequels that make the originals better? Because there weren't plot holes in Alien, right? This is just a new universe. You accept that this is it. There was no world building. Like you're dropped into it and you have to accept the world that you've been introduced to.
In Alien.
Yeah, in Alien,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And now at
no the, S.
Yeah, and then you get through all these prequels that are now the modern movies. And all of those, oh, how did this happen, are answered in such a beautiful way. And they don't, it's not handed to you, right? It's not served up on a platter. But they create the link that you have to think through and you have to achieve. And man, Alien Earth fits super well in this universe. I'm really excited for subsequent episodes. It's the it's created by Noah Hawley, who also did Fargo, Legion. He's worked on a good many other shows, so he's a known factor. The casting in Alien Earth makes sense. Timothy Oliphant, Oliphant, isn't it?
He's something like that.
He's fantastic because he's not a guy you'd ever expect, but like the when he shows up and he's there, it's just like it fits. It's really good.
I think he is one of my favorite actors, like my favorite serial actors, because he has this. He has this ability to sort of like both be sort of tongue in cheek,
mm-hmm.
Self referential, meta, like. Breaking the fourth wall levels of humility, but also like has these like roles that are really serious, and he's a fantastic, he's one of my favorites.
Super underutilized too. And I think that's maybe what makes him so good is when he's there, it just, he's the perfect round peg for the hole.
So we're going to have to come back to this, but I'm going to throw something out for you to think about, mm-hmm. and then maybe we'll come back to this. So there's three movies. So one is the original Alien movie.
Okay.
Two is First Blood, and three is Rocky. These first movies in these series, I have a feeling about. There was something that was happening around that time in film that these three movies, if you look at these three movies in a vacuum, each of the three of them almost have nothing to do with the world that they inspired, and each of them is one of, and I'm not going to pull any punches here, one of the greatest cinematic pieces of art ever made, each mm-hmm. of those three movies, mm-hmm. in very different ways. And they've inspired these like really cool but less serious worlds. And I want us, maybe on the show, maybe somewhere else, to talk about that thing that was happening at that very specific period of time. Anyway, I'll move on.
Hmm.
There's like maybe someone has written this college thesis, but I think there is like a master's or perhaps a PhD thesis on this thing.
Probably.
I think so. And so we'll come back to it. That's all I want to say. My other thing, Andrew, can we talk a little bit more about these drams?
We can. So I'm intrigued. The way you're like excited about, my guessing is leading me to believe that there's no world where I'll ever.
No, never, never.
I don't think even country where these are from.
Okay. So let's, okay, quickly, we'll quickly recap. I've got two boozes in front of you. One of them is a very light straw color. The other is a very dark copper color. The light straw color, we're getting bright orchard fruits.
Mm-hmm. Wine, like fresh oaky wine, Chardonnay almost.
Bright orchard fruits, pears, green apple, Chardonnay, mm-hmm. dryness, and perhaps a bit of oak woodiness. The other, we're getting a dark fig, raisin, some oak, but more like fruit syrup
mm-hmm.
thickness. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So these are both.
Well, my proof guess was way off, right? These.
Yeah, so you said one of them.
Fairly low proof.
You said one of them was 100. I think you said.
I think I placed the Chardonnay at 100.
Yep.
And this at 110.
Okay, they're both 120.
Okay.
Almost exactly 120. Not exactly, but almost exactly 120. These are both the same distillate.
Interesting.
They're both aged roughly 7 to 10 years.
Hmm.
They're both single malts. They're both scotches.
I got a little flash of peat in this darker one.
Unpeated. Both of them unpeated.
Really?
These are Abelor, Abenah, and one of them is the Abenad Alba. So Abenad is Abelor's sort of experimental cask strength series. The original Abenad is aged in Oloroso sherry butts for roughly 7 to 10 years. They're non-age stated. And then the Alba. So the sherry butts is the darker, more sort of figgy, jammy. Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense.
That's right. It's very sherry forward. And you heard that and your eyes instantly were like, aha, yes. Mm-hmm. So kind of like a Macallan vibe. It's a Speyside scotch.
Yeah, it does. It has a little bit of that.
It's a sherry forward, but it's different because it's cask strength.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, the Alba, is first fill bourbon casks.
Yeah.
So first fill sherry casks on the original Abenad, and the Alba first fill bourbon casks. And so in the one, we get this really sherry forward. What's more interesting to me is the Alba, which is, you know, when we think of bourbon, this does have some bourbon notes in it. And even some rye notes, I think, because you get a little pepper.
Mm-hmm.
It's really bright.
It's like, crazy bright. It's like drinking wine.
It's a summer drink.
Yeah.
It's a cold, like a white wine. You're right. So I bought both of these, which is like $250 worth of scotch, because I was so fascinated by what I read about these. And I was like, oh, I got to try those. These are the types of drinks that make me curious about, like, now I'm gonna become a scotch guy because I'm like, these things are fucking fantastic. And actually, I'm not sure I'm gonna become a scotch guy because I don't think there's anything else in scotch that's like this.
No, there's, I mean, they exist, but they're
few and far between.
They're few and far between. I think Macallan is a really good comparison to draw to the darker one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Because Macallan drinks really similar, but Macallan has more scotchy, like stereotypical scotchy notes.
I think you get all of that here. For me, especially when I go back from the Alba, I get that all here.
I have one for you to try downstairs. Probably not today because we're probably blown out.
I'm not. Let's keep it going. That's my other thing. Abelor, Abenad, and Abenad Alba. Now, these are Scotch words, and I'm pronouncing them as close as possible
to the spelling,
to what I think they're supposed. No, not to the spelling. The spelling is Abenad, but that's not how it's pronounced. And so I'm like doing an approximation of a Scottish pronunciation, but it's not there. So forgive me.
I'll need to see the bottles to
spell. I got them. I brought them.
Abelor?
Yes.
Abelor, Abenad, and Abenad Alba. I'm telling you, it's like all of a sudden I think I'm a Scotch guy, and maybe I'm not because I tasted a bunch of other scotches that I have, and I'm like, meh. I'm like, oh, Le Gobelin 16? Yeah, thanks. I'm fine. I'm good.
I mean,
it's a basic bitch scotch.
But it's also, like, known to be a, like,
beginner scotch.
Almost like a novelty because of, like, the iodine in it. And I really like the 16. But you have to like that flavor profile to enjoy it.
And I don't really know all that much about scotch. I gotta admit, I know a lot about bourbons. I don't know that much about scotch. So when we talk about like, oh, what's a Speyside? What's an is Islay or whatever. I don't really know. I know that these are fucking amazing whiskeys. That's what I know. Like, kind of blew my mind.
I wish I would have guessed, because my last taste before you spilled, I was like, oh, that could be Scotch whiskey.
You know, and I accidentally said it earlier, and you were like, they're not Scotches. And I was like, yeah.
Oh. You heard me?
I accidentally said it. Yeah. I was like, fucking idiot. Really good.
Very good.
And we've just had probably...
For this, when I saw this color, I should have gone Scotch. I went Japanese, obviously.
Which makes sense. They're single malts, right? Mm-hmm. And they feel like they could be Japanese. Mm-hmm. They feel very much like they could be, because they don't feel like Scotch. Mm-mm. The higher proof points. Like, Aberlour is a cool distillery. So, anyway, I don't think I'm going to become a Scotch guy, but these two whiskeys sort of, like, kind of opened my eyes. I was like, whoa.
When we eventually go to Scotland, I am going to go to my Laphroaig plots.
Cool. Let's do it.
Yeah.
These are fantastic.
Have you ever done that?
Uh-uh.
When you buy Laphroaig, if you, like, mail in, you get, like, a lease to, like, a one-by-one square of their...
That's fun.
Property.
Can you actually go to your
square?
Yeah, you
can go visit it. If you go to the distillery, they can...
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Like, this is mine. Erect a little domicile on it.
I don't know which one I like better, Andrew.
I think I like this one better.
Is that the Alba?
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, I go back and forth. So, that the Alba... That's the one that I wouldn't be able to tell that's a Scotch. And so I drink that and I'm like, whoa, this is really fucking good. But the regular sherry forward Abenade, the Oloroso. You're like
not even able to tell that this is a whiskey. This is just a really fascinating.
It's so good.
It almost drinks like a cocktail or like maybe a really light barley wine.
I think if you want a Scotch, so I was thinking about this. If you want Scotch, if you're like, I want to drink Scotch, you might not like this. But I think if you're like, I don't care what I drink, I just want something that's delicious and it's 85 degrees outside and it's August.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that maybe with an ice cube. God damn. Yeah. Yes, please.
Yeah, I think you put a rock in here.
Yeah.
This is like how you get white guy wasted.
Yeah.
Instead of white girl wasted. Like, it's not rosé all day. It's...
Well, and we've had 4 ounces of this. So I poured us each 2 ounces of each of these because I knew we had an hour to drink them. So I feel it. I think you do too.
Yeah. I'm about ready to go to bed.
4 ounces of this. I mean, it's 120 proof, each of these, which it's really hard to find Scotch over 43, much less 60.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there are a few of them, you know. You know, I think famously Glenfarclas 105 is a cask strength. There's a few Glenlivets that are out there. Glendronach, I think, has a cask strength. There are a handful of cask strength Scotches out there, but this is atypical. Which I think is what attracted me to it, coming from the bourbon world.
Yeah.
Like, my bourbon nerd was like, oh, cask strength Scotch? Yes, please. Especially unpeated, right? Because I'm not a huge fan of peat smoke.
Oh, you might. I'm not going to give you what I have then.
No, I want to try.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to try. I mean,
it's a Laphroaig element.
I drink peated shit, too. So.
You drink shit?
Andrew, anything else you want to add?
No, I'm out of things.
All right, listen, you guys. I want to thank you once again for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20 of the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor, go to our website. It's watchclicker.com. And that's where we post articles and reviews and notes and other fun things about watches. If you want to follow us on social media, it's Instagram is where we're at. And you can do that at watchclicker or at 40and20_watchclicker. We post mostly just pictures. That's what we post there, pictures. If you want to support us, and really we hope you do, I did the math. We've got over $1,000 of hosting every year that we have to pay. And so we barely get there with the support we get. If you want to go to patreon.com/40and20 and support us, it would really mean the world to us, okay? That's how we keep this thing going, and that's how our wives don't kill us. And if you want to tune back in next Tuesday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like, we'd love it.
Bye-bye.